The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks, and this is your host, Richard McCall, in Bogota, Colombia, bringing you episode 311 of the Colombia Calling podcast. This week's special guest is one of the founders of MeColombia.com. That's Colombia with a K. Check out the website, MeColombia.com, for a different take and perhaps a more critical take of the news coming out of Colombia. And so I make no excuses for the conversation that is had with the unnamed director of MeColombian.com in segment three after the news with Adrian Alsema. A huge thank you to those of you out there who have submitted or sponsored the Columbia Calling podcast on Patreon. That's patreon.com. It's coming along very nicely. And for as little as $2 a month, you can help us grow and improve. That's patreon.com, Columbia Calling. And a huge shout out to all those people who've been on the show so far this year. 306, Columbia's Ancient Trails, 307, discussing precarious peace, 308, James El Peligroso, 309, previous episodes of the Columbia Calling podcast, and 310, Travel for Women Birders in Colombia. They've been excellent episodes. We've really started on a very strong vein of form, and this is how we choose to continue for the rest of 2020. So thank you to all of those of you out there who've sponsored and, of course, who tune in, week out, and share the word about the Columbia Calling podcast. Now, without further ado, I'll leave you with Adrian Alsema of Columbia Reports and the news update from this week in Colombia. Thank you again, and don't go away.
My name is Adrian Alsema, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for February 11, 2020. A fugitive coalition politician made damning accusations against President Iván Duque and his political allies from Venezuela. In a seemingly prep testimony, former senator-elect Aida Merlano accused Duque's allies from the Caribbean coast of conspiring to kidnap and assassinate her. Merlano broke prison after she was sentenced for election fraud last year and was arrested by Venezuelan special forces in January. Top government officials set up a political warfare operation that carried out online attacks against journalists, according to journalist collective Liga Contra el Silencio. The initiative was set up by Colombia's consul in Orlando with the help of top aides of President Iván Duque and his political patron, former President Álvaro Uribe. The group coordinatedly attacked journalists on Twitter and spread disinformation beneficial to the government and the far-right Democratic Center Party. School teachers rang the alarm on Sunday after one was assassinated, another survived an assassination attempt, and 43 received death threats in the past week. Teachers' union FECORE said that the far-right party of Duque and Uribe has been inciting violence against teachers. The ELN carried out its first bomb attack in Medellin in 20 years, according to Mayor Daniel Quintero. The bomb attack on an electricity tower just outside the urban area was a retaliation of the arrest of two alleged ELN ringleaders, the mayor said. The military increased operations in the woods west of the city to prevent more attacks. The global Latin American and Colombian organizations of memorial sites have expelled Colombia's National Center for Historical Memory. the once respected institution was expelled because its director denies the armed conflict and regularly offends victims. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Columbia Calling with Richard McCall.
This is segment 3 of episode 311 of the Columbia Calling podcast. You know me well. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota. My guest, who prefers to remain unnamed, is Mi Colombia. That's M-I, Colombia with a K. So I don't know if it's a satirical website, because I don't really think it is. It's more sartorial. And they, the strap line of the website, Mi Colombia, and you can find them on Twitter or Facebook, and their website, micolombia.com, is Colombia deserves better. And so it's a collective of journalists, and we've got one of them here who's going to talk about the website a little bit and talk about what's going on in Colombia, why he set up Mi Colombia. So tell us a little bit, Mr. Unnamed, or Mr. Mico. Mr. Mico.
You can refer to me as Mico. I'm the editor, as it were, one of the founders. Mico is an experiment. Mico was a way to tap into things that I thought that the English press, the international press, and indeed the Colombian press, they tackle, but there are other things that weren't being talked about. Cultural things, societal things, things that piss a lot of people off. People who talk at bars, in quiet corners, in circles, in hushed voices, in every corner of this country talk about, but do not talk about publicly. If there are public officials or they're writers, they don't touch with a 10-foot pole. I thought there was a market for that. I thought there was a space for that. This comes off as very controversial. One of my pieces, I talk about the lack of a social contract in this country that I've not seen. Mm. And you see it on the street every day. The people, there's no common courtesy, I guess it were. That's one of the aspects of it. Just talking about Colombia as a society, how Colombians as people every day on the streets, how they come across to each other, and to how they just don't really consider. I mean, it's hard to paint a country in broad strokes, but it kind of is in a way by what it lacks. And I thought there was a space for that, and it wasn't being addressed in a certain way. Now, we've gotten a lot of hate mail for this. We've gotten a lot of people who don't like us, who specifically have come after us in certain
Mainly
ways.
Mainly Colombians, all Colombians.
I would say it's a mixed bag of Colombians and foreigners so far. But I think these things need to be addressed, not in a bellicose way, not in a belligerent way, not as some people have called us racists, when many of our contributors are themselves Colombians who think about these issues and enjoy the fact that there is a space for it. But it's a mixed bag of people. We also have people who wrote a couple times saying, thank you. Mm. I've been looking for something like this. Mm. How can I contribute? And we're always looking for contributors, contributions. We have a section called Write For Us. And if you have the style, the courage, and the eloquence to say something that you really want to say, but you're not seeing anywhere in any media form, be it Colombian, international, or the English press here in Colombia, we're always welcome to hear from you.
Yeah, and so I mean, you've written some pretty, you know, there's been, I would say, controversial pieces, but at the same time, like you said, it's not being discussed. Discussed it openly. I mean, we've seen news like, let's say, the news that came out the last couple of weeks. Certainly, of course, this one with the ex-Congresswoman Aida Merlano, who escaped in the most ridiculous way in what, October, down a rope outside of her dentist's office. And, you know, she was jailed for vote buying. And then, you know, she's now turned up in Venezuela. And the first things first, you know, President Duque is asking for her extradition, and then asks that, you know, is filing it with Juan Guaido, who's the interim president. And of course, this has given Maduro, President Maduro, every opportunity to use this. And now Aida Merlano is saying that the caciques de la costa, so the people who run the coast, the Gerlains and the Char families, you know, she said, You know, it was those guys who organized my escape, and then they were going to kill me on a farm in Valle du Par. Right. And then you've got Guerlain responding, oh, yeah, but vote buying is a tradition on the coast. Well, sorry. I mean, so's female circumcision in some parts of the world. It doesn't mean you have to respect it. I mean, I don't feel that the international press is really, you know, it's been a long time since I've actually written anything because I just don't have the energy to do it in terms of, you know, convincing editors that it should be done and so on. But I just don't think the international press really is getting it out there just how, well, this is corruption. I mean, this is corruption from the very elementary basis of society, that the people that, you know, we should be looking to for what would you say, give us some inspiration in how the country can move forward. I don't know. But so this is what you want to do on the website, I think, is to draw light on this stuff.
Yeah, that one's a real tricky case, because she says she's kind of a fall guy. And I would have to agree with her. Mm-hmm. I don't see how, I mean, the marmalade, the corruption, the vote buying, that is, she's not wrong. I think if there's one kernel of truth, and again, we have to take everything she's saying with a huge grain of salt, but I would happen to agree with her that, especially on the coast, vote buying is not only rampant, it's systematic. Yeah. There's a machinery in place for it. So that she gets called out, she goes down for it as a fall guy. Why wouldn't she want to try to escape? Why wouldn't she want to try and tell her story? Mm. And the fact that now she's on the run and they help her escape, claimed that she was sexually assaulted on this farm in Valle du Par. They had a pit, like they showed her the pit. It was ready for her body. And then she somehow mysteriously escaped again. I'm not sure about any of that. That just boggles the mind. And then she arrives in Venezuela, and she's saying all these things. She's threatening to bring down, this is a quote, bring down the political class. And she just didn't mean that on the coast. She meant the Colombian political class. And she's reading from a script handed to her by Maduro in exchange for some type of immunity, some sort of exile, some sort of freedom. Is she telling the truth? How can we know? If you're a foreign journalist coming in, you parachute in, or you've been here, how do you report this story? Yeah. So how do you, if you're an editor in London, in New York, how do you wrap your head around this when the Colombianistas, the Colombia watchers who live here, can't really figure it out? They don't know what's true. They don't know what's false. But this is, despite all of the mystery that surrounds it, the contradictions, the untruths, the lies, it's distinctly, something about this story is distinctly Colombian.
Yeah.
And I can't read enough about it. So I love it. It's like, for me, it's like a telenovela. I wouldn't know. I was thinking about this the other day. How do I write about this? I'm not even sure how we would address it at Miko. If any of you have any ideas as for a hook, we'd be happy to hear it.
I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's so tough to try and get this, because otherwise, you know, that you know, I was talking to a retired journalist, in his 70s from ABC News last night. He was just visiting the country, and I got onto the Aida Merlano, and he was like, well, you know, the story's cute, but what's behind the story? And that's the truth of it. And it's like, how? I mean, because these caciques and this political class, they're not going to allow it to come out. I mean, it will come out, and then it will just be brushed under a carpet again, and it will be another of these issues in Colombia that, you know, it just sort of happened.
And something else or 10 other things will pop up, and we'll have to, like, firemen rush to that fire to address, and we'll all forget about issue, and we'll never hear from her again, and she'll be in some hole and somewhere in... she'll end up in Miami. We're all Colombian crows end up like migratory birds.
It makes me think of last year's one when suddenly that it popped up that the death threats against Timochenko, the political leader of the FARC, former military leader of the FARC, but political leader of the FARC, came at exactly the same moment as suddenly, came the day after the Chusada, so the phone tapping scandal. And suddenly that comes out and you're like, oh, you know, it's all so convenient. Am I being a conspiracy theorist? You live in London, in Colombia, long enough, you start to believe these things, you know?
That veteran reporter you were talking to was right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what is behind the story? But it's like, you sort of shrug and go, There's so many stories out there.
Yeah.
The death of that man who drank the poison bottle.
Pinzano,
his death. We never got to the bottom of that.
That's just gone away. It's just gone away now.
It's just gone away. I mean, Humberto Martinez, he's out there, you know, like living it up in Miami, and we'll never know that. He was actually named by Merlano.
Merlano as well. Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
I would like for that story to come back because it's not an exception that it's almost impossible to get to the bottom of these stories. Mm. It's the rule.
Now.
And it's fascinating. It's as fascinating as it is frustrating.
Well, that's what I said yesterday, is like, it's never dull here, but it becomes so repetitive. And now a personal anecdote on that one. So I was taking my wife, you know, for a checkup at the Clinica del Country. And whilst we were there, what's his name? Humberto?
Humberto Martinez.
Yeah, Martinez. Nestor Humberto Martinez walked in for a checkup as
the
well.
The former fiscal. Yeah,
with five bodyguards, and the ambience became, and she just went, that's Nestor Humberto Martinez, and I saw him as well. It, as they would say in Spanish, it became so pesado. There was a real heaviness and negativity. And you start to believe these things. He walked in for his appointment, five bodyguards all around him, and everything changed, and everyone was nervous. And I mean,
El Don, the Godfather.
Yeah. The Godfather kind of walked in, and we all ended up looking at our feet and everything. I mean, it was just like, it really changed everything. But anyway, personal anecdote, saw him there. But as I say, this repetitive nature, it just seems to go round and round. Did it happen as much? I guess so, under the last administration. I guess it did. But it just seems that we, you know, and I want to say this, and I always say this, that we've taken a common enemy of, let's say, the FARC, or the FARC, when it was at arms, the proper FARC, we've taken them out of the picture, and maybe it's just created a greater transparency, and we're seeing the more normal things like corruption more visibly. Is that something you would think as Mico, or is it just like, we've got a dreadful administration which is doing everything so badly?
Well, I would argue that the peace accord made things more violent. Mm-hmm. And if you ask me why, I would say, look at the numbers.
Yeah.
Violence actually went. So less soldiers are dying.
Yeah.
Less combatants are dying. More social leaders are dying in a sort of systematic sort of way. Mm-hmm. Every other day now. Mm-hmm. There was a bit lull. There was always a lull around Christmas and New Year's, but it's picked right back up where it left off. Social leader killed here. I think there was one killed in Cauca yesterday or the day before.
It's one every other day.
You need a sheet of armor. You need a thick skin. If you really watch this country, you need to grow a thick skin, or you're not going to last. You're going to burn out. And I have so many friends, both mostly Colombian, foreign as well, and they just don't follow it. They choose to actively not follow politics, to actually turn off the news, to actually switch the radio station in their car off the things. And I can't blame them.
Yeah.
Because things are getting worse. There's never been a system of justice. Mm. There needs to be some sort of system of justice. There was that doctor who killed three people with a self-defense on a bridge. And you look at the comments on Facebook and social media, it's almost uniformly in support of him. It's uniformly in taking, you know, justice, the law, into your own hands, because the police are either too inept, too corrupt, or just straight up too lazy to do anything about it. Doesn't matter how many police you put on the streets. Mm. So murders are down, but like theft and crime and robberies and muggings are up. You know, in those places.
Yeah. The guy, you know, that doctor who killed the three assailants, let's say, there was, and then there was a photo, you know, that went out in the press. Very strange photo. No blood in the photo. These guys lying in bizarre positions. I don't even know. I mean, some people came up and saying it was a social cleansing of some port, which is, of course, for those of you who don't know, it's when the powers that be start getting rid of, let's say, unwanted or people who are paid, people have paid to put them on a list, like a hit list. But it's really weird. And I obviously, Twitter, of course, is there for everyone to be a hater. I mean, that's the truth. Everybody's out there, and that's when you see it. But I look through the story, and of course, there was some ultra right wing people on there going, oh, this guy's a patriot. And I'm like, at what point is he a patriot? I mean, self defense. You know, at some point you say, okay, self defense. But why are you carrying a gun?
Probably because he knows his route. He knows that there are people who rob people on that that footbridge he has to take to and from work every day. When there's no system of justice, people you can only push them so far before they start carrying a gun. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. The political classes don't care.
They don't care.
Cross footbridges.
No.
They have armed escorts. They're driving around in black SUVs to and from everywhere. Mm. So why should they care? Mm. When have they ever cared? So I would argue that taking the law in your own hands and indeed social cleansing might be the only alternative to get some sort of security, especially here in Bogota.
If we move back to something that was said earlier, now this killings of social leaders, and we're above 650 since 2016 when the peace accord was signed. We've got our president Duque, who I honestly don't believe is in charge, and I think anyone who reads the Colombian press or is an observer of Colombia will know that as well. He can't do anything right, and whoever is backing him, and we'll name names later, but. Representing Duque's voice represents other voices, which represent large landowners and elsewhere. But what I wanted to say is, this president we've got, even if he's trying to be his own man, has misread the country by a good 15, 20 years. I mean, he still thinks that we're back in the dark days of the real, let's say, armed conflict in Colombia. And so he comes up with, this is something I've been thinking about for some time, is his grandiose statements of grand pacts and announcements of what he's doing. So if we go through what he's done, a while back when there was all sorts of trouble and the fires in the Amazon, he said, well, they had that meeting, I guess it was in Leticia, Peruvian government was there, some representative of the Brazilian government, Ecuadorian government, the Gran Pacto del Amazonas. Of course, that's existed since the 1960s. Well done for launching that one again. And then he comes up with, after a real massacre in, I guess it was October in Cauca, or was it Nariño? Cauca, I think it was, when the geologists were murdered, and it had all the hallmarks of the Mexican cartels. And then he said, I've got an elite team, we're announcing an elite team to investigate the killings of the social leaders. Again, nice grandiose thing. And his only plan is to get the guys who pull the trigger, not the actual people who are putting, let's say, the orders down. Then after the month and a half of strikes, it was the Gran Conversación Nacional, so to hear everyone, and this, again, a grandiose thing. Nothing's coming of that. And then, as we said, this last week, he's got the Bloque de Búsqueda Anticorrupción, so the search party in favor of anti-corruption. It's just one grandiose title meant for sound bites again, but I don't see anything happening. We read in El Espectador from this last week, it's the government of euphemisms. So this is the only way he's going to be remembered, I think.
And like you said as well, I can't think of one policy that he's done successfully. He campaigned on lowering taxes, and then he tried to raise them on the what we might call family basket, staple goods for all people. So essentially a tax on the poor. And his own right-wing party voted him down in Congress. His own party backed him, I would say. They cut him off. So that was a policy embarrassment.
Yeah.
All of these labels, it's just like anything else. It's painting broad strokes for the media, getting the soundbite out there, and then doing nothing.
But again, sorry to interrupt you. Fortunately, there are journalists questioning. Fortunately, there are articles coming out. Fortunately, the Espectador is saying, the euphemisms. Whether that message gets out to the populace is another story.
I just think that Colombians, you know, they hear it, and they're extremely suspicious of their government. They're extremely, they, no one trusts any of the institutions here. This is part of the societal problems as well. Yeah. So they don't believe anything anyway. And what is his, what was his last poll rating at? Something
27?
Like 27%. I don't see that going up anytime soon. I mean, he can't even get a neighboring country. Mind you, there's no formal diplomatic ties, but he can't give a neighboring country to return a criminal. He doesn't even know which channels to use. Like, he goes in front of the UN with evidence of the ELN, President of Venezuela, and there's ample real evidence, mind you, for that.
Yeah.
And he uses doctored dated photos and makes an ass of Colombia on the international stage. What has Duque left?
Yeah.
What does he have left to do but use euphemisms that gullible, hard right people still might believe?
Yeah. That was that when, and then Carlos Holmes Trujillo, the Minister of Defense, stood up and said, oh, they were contextual. It was just awful. I mean,
and there's something like 3,000 troops, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less on what day. When I say troops, I mean rebel fighters of the ELN. That's a fact.
Yeah,
and there's real evidence out there for that.
Yeah.
Why not use that? I can't. It boggles the mind.
Yeah,
it was shocking. It was shocking. They just came out. Within a matter of hours, the photographers and the agencies came out and said no, because they were attributing those photos to the AFP, for example.
Yeah.
You can't have that on a doctored photo when the leader of a country, when the president of Colombia goes in front of the international community and uses what are essentially doctored photos or photos that are real but are not from... That photo of the ELN with dancing kids? With children.
Yeah. But that was in like Nariño?
Yeah,
something
it was
like
in Nariño, and it was like 4 or 5 years ago. And immediately the agencies scrambled to save their own reputations, because if they did not do so, it was like AFP, AP, Reuters aren't part of this conspiracy.
No.
That would have been the next thing.
Could you imagine?
They scrambled and they came out and they saved themselves. But what do you say about a leader, a quote unquote leader, who can't even... He can't even present evidence when there is real evidence.
He's
so inept.
He doesn't ask questions. Yeah. If his aides bring that to him and say, this is how, and this is the speech, and this is what you're going to do, because he clearly doesn't, you know, he doesn't write his own speeches. And no president does, but they have to look through it. Surely you should be sitting down and saying, all right, well, tell me about this photo and tell me about this. And then, but he just, I mean, he might as well have just received it as he walked onto the podium. There's no question.
So, there were a round of firings, dismissals for that international blunder. International embarrassment is another thing. It's just, I can't, like I said, like you said, it's like, we'll never get to the bottom of these things. You need a thick armor.
Yeah.
And you just, at some point, just throw your hands up. Something else happens and move on, because it's almost a self-defense mechanism, because if you really try to dig, you're just going to end up chasing your tail in a lot of ways.
Well, I mean, this is the thing, and we're now talking, I mean, these are all things that happened, let's say, the end of last year, beginning of this year, of course, we're in just beginning, but think about what has just happened. The head of the army giving, you know, and probably taken somewhat out of context, but, expressing his
lament for the death
of Popeye,
of Colombia's biggest mass murderer.
Yeah. You know, and then, of course, he comes up and says, you know, because of the family, blah, blah, blah. This man is responsible for himself 300 killings that he's admitted to, and involved 3,000 killings, and involved in, of course, giving the weapon to the killing of Luis Carlos Galán, a presidential candidate. I mean, this guy was awful. I mean, if you think about, and no remorse whatsoever. But the head
of the army. He capitalized on it.
Yeah. The head of the army. Just don't say anything.
Imagine the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the United States lamenting the death of I don't know, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Well, I'd say even
Charles
more
Manson,
that.
Of Manson. Ted Bundy. We lament the death as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States.
I would say even more.
Lament the death of
Osama Ted bin Bundy. Laden. I mean, it's someone who's killed. I mean, because I would just say I can't get my head around it. Maybe there's a contextual issue. Maybe I give him the benefit of the doubt. But why would you even say anything?
Yeah, it's not your place to say anything. Keep your mouth shut. Focus on your policy failures and the fact that, you know, we're still technically at war with the last remaining rebel group. And why are you focusing on a gangster and a mass murderer? Why are you lamenting his death? No. Why are you saying that publicly?
Why are you
still in a job? why are you still in that position? All right, because, well, maybe the upper brass have always been gangsters and military and sort of in lockstep, if you will, with the paracos, paramilitaries.
I mean, the whole issue of paramilitary means it's affiliated to the military at some level. But, I mean, yeah, let's take this. I mean, we've got... We needed in Colombia, and I say we, I live here, it's been 14 years. the bags under my eyes are for different reasons. I'm tired, but...
you look surprisingly well.
Oh, thank
you. That's very kind.
Must be the coffee. But we needed, and I know, I didn't want Gustavo Petro to win the elections. That someone on the far left won 7 to 8 million votes is a huge deal. It means a stigma is moving away from liberal left wing. I don't like saying the left wing, right wing now, because it's just a way of tarring anyone who's got any sort of progressive beliefs. The right people don't get through to the second round or they don't run. But we needed a government and a president to guide us through this 4 years, like a stable guiding hand. And we didn't get it. You've been here a long time, but in your knowledge, who would you have put forward, or how would you describe the ideal candidate for Colombia right now?
Well, I think you put it in a previous segment. You mentioned two people which I liked. I like them with massive reservations. I like Humberto de la Calle.
Yeah.
And I also like Sergio Fajardo. Sorry,
why did Humberto de la Calle, he only got like 350,000 votes in that first round.
If he didn't run, Fajardo would be president right now.
Yeah, it's true, because it would have given but I just like, Humberto de la Calle is a statesman. He was, he ran against Samper in that election. Ernesto Samper came second, so Samper gave him the vice presidency back then. The only person to come through the Ernesto Samper government unscathed by all the scandals, the cartel connections, and the only person, an honest politician in truth, as far as I know, the guy who put everything on the line for the peace accord.
The only one with integrity.
Integrity.
Rare breed of...
Of a Colombian politician, and at the end of it, you say, Colombians said thank you by voting 350,000. And my wife, I'm going to say this now, she voted for De La Calle. And I had said some days before, I think you need to vote more strategically. What I'm seeing is Humberto De La Calle is going to drown in this election. I think you need to vote strategically for Sergio Fajardo. One vote, but if everyone had done it, he would have gone through. And she, she reprimanded me, as she does for many things, for saying, do this. But I think now, and we've discussed it later, so you kind of had a point.
So yeah. Well, I mean, in an ideal world, it would have been him or Fajardo, though. And I forget if it was maybe Forbes or the Wall Street Journal. Someone said that Colombia needs a boring centrist government. And
that's precisely it.
Yeah, and I was like, that's spot on. That's exactly what we need. Someone who's fiscally responsible, who's going to tackle corruption, at least, corruption is sort of on an industrial scale, but like make a dent into it. Be transparent. Not bury everything's like the reform pension reform and labor reform. Don't bury them into euphemisms. And then when people call you on it, tell them that they're lying and then push forward anyway. Yeah. And then shuffle your cabinet so you bury it with another layer of obscure things. It could be that, and it would be really nice. It would bring back it would make people want to invest, want to travel. They still say that Colombia is still the destination where people want to come and visit. But if things carry on the way they are, I don't see that continuing. It might be a flash in the pan, and it will be the fault of the Uribistas. And it could have been anyone.
Yeah.
It could have been, the one time that Uribe didn't win an election was when Santos got back in for a second term.
Yeah.
But this puts a dent in the Uribista philosophy that we'll vote for anyone that Uribe puts in front of us.
Well, and I mean,
this is for Uribismo in the long term, this is not looking good. Mm. And I would say at least for the short, medium term, Colombia is not looking good in terms of a place to invest in, a place to set up a business, a place to retire in, which a lot of people do, or a place to just travel to. Mm.
It's a tough one. And the Uribista thing, the camp is, I mean, think about it. Uribe got himself in back in 1998. And then he, was able to change the constitution to run again. So he got in again in 2002. Then he put his protege Santos in, who then, about face and Volfas. And then, he put up Zuluaga against Santos, and it was, marginal. I mean, that Santos won. And Santos won it by being very crafty and saying the ELN would come to the negotiating table after the fight. And then, he put his protege again, Duque, in. I mean, this guy is powerful. As we wind this down, because there's too much to say about, he's up in the Supreme Court on charges of witness tampering. My colleague and friend Adrian Alsimer of Columbia Reports is saying he's going to jail. I don't think he will. I think he'll be able to pull strings and get out.
I love Adrian, and he does great work, but he tends to get carried away in a lot of ways. He tends to editorialize a lot. And he is overtly working against, he's a bit of an activist journalist.
Yeah.
That passion is needed.
Yeah.
But I think he wants it too badly, and he's sort of blinding the sort of cold reality of the truth that this man is never going away.
I think that's it. I mean, he's in, I picture him in a basement in Medellin, sort of a bit like a crazy there. But what he does is important. His voice is important, but like you say, bit maybe too much activism in that.
Bit of a mad scientist of journalism, I would
mad think. Scientist. Or, was he called a Renaissance man at some point? I don't know.
Enfant terrible.
Enfant terrible. That's what but I mean, important. But I think you're right now, and that blinding towards it. He keeps telling me. I get messages on WhatsApp saying, "Oh, he's going to jail now. He's going." I just don't think that Colombia is ready to put an ex-president in jail who's still so popular and powerful. I don't know.
How many investigations are currently open against him?
167. I read it yesterday.
I was going to say, it was at least a couple dozen. I didn't know it was in the triple
really
digits.
It's really high. There's a really big
list.
So,
I mean, this one will just go on the pile, won't it? Mm. Who has the balls, especially with his puppet, president in power, and all the cabinet ministers, the the attorney general, the chief prosecutor? They're all friendly to him. They're not going to touch Uribe.
No.
It would be political and physical suicide to do so. And we see the deaths of these, we've seen the death of witnesses.
Yeah.
No. And if you just listen to five words that come out of his attorney's mouth, that man is a straight up gangster.
De la Estrella. He used to be a neighbor in a neighboring building of mine. We used to call him the devil's lawyer.
He's just a straight up gangster. He's just like, he was being recorded and he didn't know, and the way he talks, he sounds like a common yeto you might find sticking you up with a knife in the street at night.
He's terrifying.
He's a gangster.
Terrifying man.
He might go away, though, because he ran his mouth too much. Yeah. And like anyone else, there needs to be a fall guy. Yeah. Enough people will be appeased. Mm. Getting back to Marlena, it's the same sort of thing. I do believe, despite everything, I think she's a horrible person. I do think she's a fall guy for a larger group. I could see him being a fall guy. I do not see Uribe going down, being behind bars. I hope that I'm wrong. I just don't see it in this current climate. I just don't see it in this country. I don't think there's anyone out there with the courage to do it. There's no one. Even if in an alternate universe, Gustavo Petro is president, all the problems that come with that. But there's a sort of a center-left chief prosecutor in place. I don't think they would touch it. I think they would be afraid to do so, and rightfully so.
Gustavo Petro, getting onto him, he's just noxious at the moment. You know, I think he had his moment, and that was his peak, the 7 to 8 million. And now he's still running his mouth off, still he believes his own myth. And honestly,
just the arrogance that comes. Yeah. If you follow just the arrogance.
I want him to step aside.
He's the self-appointed leader of the Paro Nacional. Are you kidding me?
That was the worst. That was the worst.
The man that makes my skin crawl.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and so listen to us here. We're slamming both left and right. I mean, I know that the hate mail will come in, but all the hate tweets and stuff will call me. I got called a socialist communist the other day, and I was like, okay.
I've been called an Uribista and a communist in the same month. For the most vitriolic emails, messages, tweets I've gotten, private messages, my response is only the same. If you disagree, write for us.
Yeah.
Write against us. Write a counterpiece against something I've said or written or something, someone on our team, the loose collection that we are.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, if we're pissing you off, you have a forum to refute it.
Well, this is the thing. This is what we need in Colombia, is debate. You know, civilized
serious debate.
Not
impassioned.
You know, if you got something to say against the left, say it. You got something to say against the right, say it. You know, we need this debate. We need this conversation.
Like you said at the start, are left-right still accurate terms? We need to have debate about that. We need to have debate about the lack of security in this, the lack of, you know, looking out for one another, the lack of common courtesy. These are not insults. These are things that Colombia could achieve, but they need to have a serious look at it. And it's hard. I understand that as a foreigner saying it, it's like, how dare you? If someone came to my home country and said that, I would be exactly the same. Mm-hmm. But I continue to say, like, it could be better. It's not a pipe dream. No. Common things like that. Better security, better transparency, looking out for one another. Mobilize communities where police to fill the void where police are not doing their jobs.
Yeah.
These are things that have been done in other places and could definitely be achieved in certain, not broad sweeping the whole country, but especially in the cities. Mm. These are things that could take place, and there's baby steps towards progress. And that's the only thing we can really hope for at this point, is baby steps. And coming from the grassroots, like the Para, I tend to idealize things. There was a student movement before the Paro a couple months.
Yeah.
Before that, that was something that I would like to see. I sort of idealized and then pulled back from. And then there was the indigenous protests, which again, Duque flew to, what was it? He flew there, was about to talk, and pulled out at the last minute. He was there, and he said no. So is that leadership?
No.
No. And like you said, we slam the left, we slam the right. We don't even know if those are political. For lack of a better description, those are good terms. But it has to come from the ground up.
But this is where my hope, we have to wind down, unfortunately, but this is my hope, is like when you saw the student movements, again, let's say the peaceful student movements, not the, you know, the elements outside the Nacional and stuff. When you have these student movements, when you have the 21st of November demonstrations where the government will say there were 200,000, the organizers say there were 800,000, somewhere between the two, because it was big. I was out there.
The truth would be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle. These were good. But when you saw the amount of, let's say, the youth, the new generation in Colombia coming through who really are not twisted by this. And I was just, that's where my hope lies. I mean, hopefully they don't get too cynical and hopefully they can carry this through. You know, maybe it's a generational thing. We have to just see off these 4 years and maybe the next 4 years. I don't know.
The old guard has to die, so to speak.
Yeah, sort of, you know, they're going to have to retire them somehow. You know, can we just put them out to Miami or something?
Yeah, I mean, they all go there anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Round them up and put them on a plane.
I think, unfortunately, we have to come to an end, but I think we leave this with your statement, baby steps. baby steps. Colombia deserves better. Let me take this moment to say thank you to Mi Colombia, or Mico. That's M-I and then Colombia with a K. And you can check out their website. It's micolombia.com. There are pieces coming up every now and then. They're on Facebook and Twitter. You can find them very easily. And you have a voice, write for them, send them articles, get it out there. If you want to say something, if you want to reject what's been said here, write it, write it down, debate.
We're an open, that's always been the idea, is an open forum, and to say things that are not being said enough.
Yeah.
And if you have the style, the eloquence, and the courage to say it, we welcome you writing.
Excellent. And that's why, it's not left, it's not right, it's just about revealing some of these things. And so thank you, Mi Colombia, for your time. And it's been great. It's been kind of cathartic as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. And all of you out there, thank you again for listening. Thank you for all those people who've signed up on the Patreon campaign. For as little as $2 a month, you can help us improve and expand, because that's the idea here on the Colombia Calling podcast. We're episode 311. I've been Richard McColl. Thank you again. We come back next week with more interesting interviewees. And bye-bye.